Dudes, dudettes, dirks,
dirkettes.
Want to take a quick moment to give a shout out and say thanks to our sponsor, Kansas City Beard Company. A couple weeks ago, I trimmed down my beard, and I was in hopes of breaking this horrible streak.
How'd that work out?
For the chefs, and then we played the two worst games of the season, so that did.
Wait a second. We haven't won a game since we picked them up, have we?
I don't know.
Oof. Yes.
Well. Go to kcbeardco.com, buy some stuff, hope as we band together under the banner of beards, we can all look more handsome, smell more handsome, feel better, and the Chiefs can start winning football games. It's kcbeardco.com. Let's talk some Chiefs.
What is this, amateur hour?
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
AHPKC is brought to you by ArrowheadPride.com. This is a show about football and friendship and fun. We're truthful, but not always accurate. We're red and yellow and ridiculous. We're basically Andy Reid's wardrobe, but a podcast. Enough of the formalities. Can we talk Chiefs now? Let's go.
You got Ryan Scott Hall, and that dude over there is his darkness.
What's up?
Dirk, we've lost three games in a row, man.
That's it?
I mean, I guess that's it. It certainly feels a lot worse than that.
It honestly seems like way more than that. Like, that felt like a gentle opener.
Yeah. I just... Dude, I'm really struggling to figure out
with everything,
like, what exactly is going on. So let's just start here. Over the last two games, because the last two games are like the bad ones, right? I mean, we lost at Dallas, and everybody thought it was somewhat reasonable. And then you have the bye week, and so you're thinking at the Giants, coming off the bye, and then coming home for the Bills. Even after losing the Giants, you still thought get right game playing the Bills at home.
Yeah.
So
still favored by 9.5 points, I think, going into the
Yeah, place. pretty alarming trend that the Giants in the previous two games to playing the Chiefs had surrendered 84 points, and the Chiefs scored nine.
Nine points.
Yeah, even worse, in the previous two games prior to playing the Chiefs, Buffalo had surrendered 101 points.
Oh.
And the Chiefs scored 10. So, hey, I mean, we did get a little better, I guess, right?
One point at a time.
One point at a time.
Can't wait for next week's 11-point outburst. I cannot wait!
11 points at the Meadowlands. How does one score 11 points?
In the win? I have no idea.
Three field goals and a safety is what we're going to do.
Five safeties. And a conversion safety for the rarely seen 1-point safety.
Okay.
That's how it's going to happen.
I can see it.
Who we kidding? That's more like the 2015 Chiefs. That's how they win.
Man. All right.
2013,
so,
probably.
Look, it's something that came up in a little bit of research I was doing earlier this week. Depressing stats. Don't get the same kind of traction on Twitter.
This week they don't.
Yeah. So here's the deal, and I think that this is gonna maybe open up some things for you to be able to talk about who the Chiefs are and how Andy Reid likes to play, and I thought that it was pretty telling So the Chiefs have lost three in a row. During that stretch, you would normally think it's... So what, it's 180 minutes of football or so?
Yep.
But you add, like, the extra 10 minutes of overtime. So, like, 190 minutes of football.
Yep. Football.
The Chiefs have held a lead for 5 minutes and 38 seconds of the last three games. It was a very short time after they scored that opening touchdown of the second half against Dallas. So basically, since Dallas...
Since the potato sack race.
...took the lead over the Chiefs, since the potato sack race...
The potato sack curse.
It's 21-17 at that point. The Chiefs have not held a lead at all. So they basically haven't held a lead for, like, 9-plus quarters and an overtime. I mean, it's almost like 2.5 hours of professional football that the Chiefs have not held a lead. And included in there are, like, maybe we're saying that the Bills are really bad, but the Bills have a winning record. They were the best team remaining on our schedule coming off the bye. So I don't want to inflate it like, what a terrible loss. I mean, it was, but because of the way the team played, it was bad.
Yeah, the Bills just had a couple of weeks like the Chiefs are kind of going through, I guess. Yeah. But theirs is more so on defense. Than mm-hmm. offense, and then they just replaced their quarterback for no reason.
That didn't make any sense.
But I did a little deep dive this week, and I found out it's hard to win if you're not leading.
Okay.
I crunched some numbers, took a look at the All-22, and came to the conclusion if you're not leading games, it's tough to win.
Man.
But ask the 2012 Chiefs.
Yeah.
Although they did pull off the winning a game without ever leading in the game, so maybe they've even got a step on us right now.
Tyler Palco, man, I tell you what.
Do you remember that streak when we didn't have a lead for like not the first like, 9 games or something?
Oh yeah, it was bad. Woo! It was bad. So tough times aplenty for Kansas City Chiefs fans, both past and seemingly now present. So
it's all relative. Things are tough, but come on.
I wanna talk a little bit to start today's show about something that has been happening on Twitter and now how it seems like you have like cause and effect, right? And so if you start with this is happening on Twitter, the effect of that turns into this other thing is now happening on Twitter. So Exhibit A...
The reaction to the reaction?
Right. Exhibit A in this scenario... and I'm going to name names, but I'm not here to like hurt anybody's feelings or anything.
All right, yes.
But Exhibit A, let's just say Clay Wendler.
Heard of him.
Who... Clay... he seems to be... like a pretty intelligent football guy.
Yeah.
But he also has like a very distinct path that he's trying to go down.
An agenda, you could say.
There you go. And his agenda is Alex is terrible and get him off my team. Now, a lot of that is, I mean, he's a Chiefs fan, you know? Like I think that it's exaggerated. I think that he's gone too far in the past and... If Alex always looked like he has the past two games, then it would warrant the way that Clay normally is. But that's all right. You have extremists, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like... I mean, I was kind of there with him. I was kind of on the same warpath when we first got Alex.
Yeah.
But I just eventually came around, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even, you know, when you look at, like, the first 5 weeks of the season or so when Alex was playing the way that he was, even Clay at that point was like... I can't argue with the fact that he's playing great football right now.
Yeah.
But
I don't know, he never gets any traction during those games, so I don't know.
Right. So, one of the things that Clay does, for those of you that don't follow him or haven't seen him, I mean, I'd be surprised if you haven't, because he gets pretty good circulation, but Clay, in order to prove his points about Alex, and he's really good at making graphics interchange formatted, moving videos. So, what...
Let's just not get into it today.
Let's not go there.
Let's...
So, he puts these short clips on Twitter, and it's always like, this is the perfect example of Alex, you know, not throwing the ball downfield to the open guy, yeah, or whatever. And I appreciate with Clay that it's always, like, it's a short video rather than just being a screenshot, because those screenshots, to me, are very hard.
Screenshots don't... You can't tell much from them.
Right.
It's like, here, circled guy is open. Like, well, I need to watch the play unfold.
So, Clay, I mean, he's been doing that for a few seasons now, of like, just look at this. And, I mean, I think it's been probably especially hard work for him, starting with, like, the Pittsburgh playoff game, because we spent the entire offseason looking at how they lost that game. And then, you know, after basically going 5-0 in the game since then, when Alex has played poorly, it's just like hammering these home. Look at all these things. Look at the plays where Alex is missing, yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's Exhibit A. That's what was happening on Twitter. So now what that has given way to are people that are wanting to, for one reason or another, I don't know, but debunk fan thoughts about Alex making the wrong read or the wrong decision. And the people that are doing this are former Kansas City Chief and professional football player and brother of current Kansas City Chief, Jeff Schwartz. And then we also saw this week Dan Orlovsky weigh in. And I'm going to Google real quick. Is he on a roster right now?
No, I already did it.
Okay.
Dan Orlovsky has already been Googled in this household.
All right.
Don't worry. Don't fret.
So, Dan Orlovsky...
Because I thought he was still on a team, too. Not on a team.
All right. So, not in the NFL currently. I did see someone in his mentions say, please replace Collinsworth, which I'm sure they're talking about Collinsworth.
With Orlovsky?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And he just said, working on it. So... Orlovsky,
doing his best. Romo, Cutler, Orlovsky.
Yeah.
Natural order of things.
So, I saw Orlovsky take one of these plays, and it was not the interception at the end of the game. I don't even really remember what the play was, but let's just say it was one of many plays that people
were frustrated. Kelsey kind of does like a deep curl over the middle, and then DeMarcus does like a deep in route.
Mm-hmm.
And he was stating that DeMarcus should have curled as well, because they kind of ended up right next to each other, with both of them glaringly wide open.
Right.
But he was saying that DeMarcus should have curled at the numbers and not cross like he did, because it led to two receivers right in the same spot, and he's just like, no offense would design a play like this, unless you're the Raiders, yeah, and it works out.
And
for the game-winning touchdown.
I know that...
But
I'm pretty sure the tweet from Clay was something like, Alex is actively sabotaging DeMarcus Robinson's career, and that's the kind of, like, extremist take, or at least just the way that it's worded, that I'm like, dude, we get it that you don't like Alex, but you could just say, here's an example of DeMarcus Robinson being open instead of Alex Smith is actively sabotaging this
ain't
young
gonna get no retweets like that, right?
Star.
Ain't gonna get...
So
that's why his followers are so much better than yours.
Right. Well, what I want to talk about a little bit based on this new development.
Back and forth. Pros versus Joes.
There you go. Yeah.
Pros versus Clays.
So Orlovsky, and then ultimately you get an article on Bleacher Report from Jeff Schwartz.
Read it today.
They basically are going out of their way to say that this is not all of Alex's fault. And even if it is primarily Alex's fault, it's not all Alex's fault. And when I look at what Orlovsky says, that DeMarcus Robinson ran the wrong route, and if Alex is trained to know where the guys are going to be, and those guys don't run those routes for whatever reason, then Alex can't trust his eyes anymore. Like, it's making it difficult for the quarterback to throw with anticipation and trust all the guys that are out in the field, right? That makes sense to me. What doesn't add up a little bit, at least, and I'm only looking at this play specifically because it's the one that Orlovsky reacted to. Maybe it's the only time that it happened. But Schwartz ends up saying, like, we've got guys that are running the wrong routes. We've got offensive linemen that are missing blocks. We've got all these different other things, and it's not just Alex. Well, DeMarcus Robinson specifically is playing the most offensive snaps of anyone that isn't a quarterback or offensive lineman.
Yep.
He's playing more snaps than Tyreek Hill. He's playing more snaps than Kelce. He's playing way more snaps than Kareem Hunt. He's out there, for all intents and purposes, since Chris Conley got hurt, DeMarcus Robinson is playing like 96% of the snaps.
Yep.
So, I want to ask you this. Would he be playing all of these snaps if he was consistently running the wrong routes? And maybe there isn't another option, potentially. But would he? Would Andy Reid just be putting him out there and saying, well, it's, you know, the best hope we've got, but he runs the wrong route all the time and we'll just have to deal with it?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, who else would you go to?
I mean, I don't know.
Albert's been banged up.
Right.
So, I mean, he's probably Exhibit A.
But I still don't even think that, like, that, if fully healthy, Albert's going to be the guy that's starting.
Yeah, he's more plays. Of a package player. I mean, he's kind right. of has his strengths, and I would say he would play a receiver on the outside. Every play would not be one of those. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to want to throw a 30-yard go route to Albert Wilson, really. That's mm-hmm. not really his specialty. So I think the idea is that DeMarcus is there to be that guy like Conley who can run every route. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would say that I don't see the other option on the roster. I don't know who else would do that unless you're, you know, totally redoing everything.
Do you, so I'm just asking, I mean, do you think that, or is it conceivable to you that he's running the wrong route, like, on a regular basis?
I mean, it is. Because I've seen it the last few weeks. You saw, I mean, it's not just DeMarcus Robinson. You saw Tyreek Hill and Albert Wilson both go for a screen pass. Mm-hmm. You almost never see that with the Chiefs. Two plays last week, which I'm not sure I highlighted enough when we talked about it, when I was watching the All-22, Alex got back to pass and nobody ran a route. They were run blocking and doing, they weren't in the same page whatsoever. And it was twice in the first half, and it was just like, coming off a bye, how is this happening? And I don't know who to blame for that. I guess Andy Reid would shoulder the blame on that because he's responsible for getting everyone to run the right play. But, I mean, if someone's just being a dumbass and not listening or doesn't know the play properly, and then that happens, I mean, that's not really on Andy, I guess. I don't know. But if you would have asked me that 2 weeks ago, I would have said that seems highly unlikely. But after what I've seen the last few weeks, it's just like, this is happening. It's happened a handful of times. Mm-hmm. And maybe I should watch the All-22, so maybe this happens more often than I would think. But, I mean, the Andy Reid offense is all about being crisp and everybody executing. Like, we've had, or at least we had, that same core of players for a long time. They all knew the offense really well when you're talking about Conley and Albert Wilson, and Tyreek is somewhat new, but then Kelsey's been there a long time. And I guess you could say the running back's new too, but that's probably the easiest position to pick up. So we just had this core of guys who I think could all play together for about 3 years, all practice together. They're all really on the same page, mm-hmm. and now that's not happening.
Okay.
And it's happening even with players like Albert Wilson. Or I guess Tyreek Hill. We don't know who fault it was on that screen pass, but it was one of them. And I don't know.
So there's a couple other questions that kind of are like offshoots of this.
Cool.
And it's, you know, number one, you look at just in terms of knowing the playbook, right? I mean, was the loss of Chris Conley way more than what we're thinking, just in terms of maybe he's always in the right place at the right time and he's only catching 3 or 4 passes a game maybe and he just gives you a couple first downs? But, like, is this something that we just didn't think that the offense was feeling. And, I mean, we were joking half-heartedly about Albert Wilson potentially being a huge loss because you've seen the way, like, the offense has played without him.
It's kind of hard to deny the evidence. I mean, Conley goes down at the very end of that Houston game, which is when the Chiefs were 5-0. And then immediately the offensive struggles pick up. I mean, one of my main takeaways from that Pittsburgh loss was we didn't have Wilson or Conley, and it really disrupted the offense. Now, a large part of that was also because of what the zone schemes that Pittsburgh introduced that everybody now seems to be copying. So it's kind of maybe just both hit them. And there's multiple explanations. You don't just see this offense go from best in the NFL to what it is now, to one first down in the first half, just from one thing. It's multiple reasons. And I would say that's a part of it. Conley and Albert Wilson being in and out of the lineup. And I know we talked last week, I mean, three interceptions thrown DeMarcus Robinson's way last week. That doesn't build trust. And so you're seeing DeMarcus Robinson open on some of these plays, and Alex maybe just hesitating for a split second, that's all it takes, and then he's covered. And it's too late.
Well, and one of the weird things, too, so, like, I mean, you mentioned being one of the best in the league to one of the worst in the league. You see that shift. You know, in this three-game losing streak, they scored 36 points, and they were at 32.8 when they were at 5-0.
I don't remember ever seeing anything like it.
Yeah, I mean,
like, if we would have started losing games because the defense just fell off a cliff, like, okay, that makes sense. Like, they got exposed, and, you know, we could kind of see the cracks in the armor, and now it's just being exposed. But this was just, like, from league's best to league's top bottom five, or maybe league's worst. I don't know what they've been the last 5 weeks.
It's been really bad.
So it's amazing. I've almost never seen an in-season turnaround like this. Unless you want to reference the 2015 season where the Chiefs were 1-5 and then won the last 10.
It's pretty astonishing, you know. I don't want to turn this into something that it's not. But one of the other things that I started wondering about a little bit with this idea that maybe DeMarcus Robinson isn't always running the right route, and so Alex thinks he's going to be somewhere and then he's somewhere else, is maybe some of these plays where we see DeMarcus Robinson open and we're so frustrated that Alex isn't throwing the ball is the only reason DeMarcus Robinson is open is because he's running the wrong route? Is he just, like, trying to find the open space instead of being where he's supposed to be?
No,
and if that's the case,
I doubt he's just freelancing.
But that's what I'm starting. I'm thinking about that, and then I'm starting to think, does that mean that all of these calls for play calling could, in fact, be accurate, and Andy Reid is not getting these guys open all the time, but it's just DeMarcus Robinson running around out there trying to get open?
DeMarcus Robinson is actually a genius on this offense.
DeMarcus Robinson is doing the, I'm going to get open on this play.
No, I don't think that would fly with Andy for very long. I think he would be replaced by, you know, me before right. Andy would play someone doing that.
We'd have Dat playing 96% of the snaps.
Kind of surprised I don't see more of receiver. That.
I'm not.
Given the continuity and...
If I can be completely honest, I don't know what purpose he serves on this team other than potentially touching the ball like two or three times a game.
I think he could be a valuable piece. But we have Albert Wilson and Tyreek Hill, so it's just like, you're the third best guy at your specialty on the team, so you don't do anything.
Yeah, I mean,
If you put Dat on somebody else who needs, like, a speedy little receiver to run end arounds to and little screen gadget plays, I think he'd be fine.
Yeah.
But I'd just rather see him go to Albert Wilson and Tyreek Hill, so what's the point?
And I think, he had a punt return touchdown in the preseason, I think, or maybe early in the five-game stretch. But Dat scored a touchdown, and I remember tweeting, like, that is what you hope?
He scored a deep touchdown against Pittsburgh. Is what he scored on the air. That was our one touchdown against Pittsburgh. He got loose, caught it, ended up being like a 50 or 60 yard score.
Okay. Well, I don't think that was it. I'm thinking like a punt return or something.
I don't think we have a punt return touchdown this year, unless it was preseason.
I think it was preseason.
Okay.
And I just remember seeing that and being like, you know, that's the kind of explosive play. Like, that's the reason that we have him. But they're so few and far between that I just don't. he's essentially there, like, in case Tyreek gets hurt for an extended period of time. Or, I guess, essentially, if Albert Wilson gets hurt for an extended period of time, but we didn't really see that anything while Albert Wilson was out. Alright, so here's the... I wanted to start there, and this is as a means of trying to answer some questions. So...
My answer to every question is Alex Smith.
Okay. And, I mean, I sent a tweet that said, I'm at the point where Alex Smith is the problem for everything. You tell me that the pass protection is bad, I'm going to say it's Alex Smith's fault.
No, you thought that during the game.
Yes. I said that, but
Did you continue to think that?
Yeah.
So until now, you're like, all the problems you're seeing, you're pretty much just like, it's Alex Smith's fault.
I'm at the point right now where I think that Alex is playing so poorly that it has affected every other position on the offense.
Okay.
That whether it's just the way that he's carrying himself or how deflating some of his plays are or what, that I think it's affecting everyone else in a very negative way. I mean,
hard to argue against it. I mean, he was just dreadful against Buffalo. Like, I bought the wind as an excuse because, well, all right, let me put this. I bought the wind as an excuse for Alex Smith playing bad. I thought it was embarrassing that an NFL quarterback could be trumped by the wind that much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, that's a whole different problem in itself, and it's a much bigger problem than just playing bad in one game. This week, there's no excuse, and he played one of the worst games I've ever seen him play. It was just dreadful. And I don't know what happened. Like, I know the zone thing is bothering him. I know he's getting mixed up pre-snap. But, man, like, Kent Swanson's article where it's just, like, the final drive, the very first play, it's just, like, this simple trips to the right, both of them running outs, both of them open, Kelce and Tyreek Hill, I believe. And he's looking right at him and just doesn't pull the trigger on either of them. And he tucks it and runs for 8 yards, and that's fine. So he picks up about the same that he would have completing the pass. But it's just like, why didn't he throw it? Why aren't you throwing it there?
Yeah, they're running outs to go to the sideline because you don't have any timeouts. And
it's just like, he called it a drive starter. He called it a drive starter, which is a perfect explanation. Like, here, let's get 8 yards out of the bat, which we did. So, you know, this isn't a results-based thing. It's a process-based argument against him, I guess. And he just didn't pull the trigger. He's looking right at him, didn't do it. And so I don't know if it's just confidence, if everything's just in his head right now, or what. But yes, he is problem 1A with the Chiefs right now. He's been just dreadful. Just dreadful.
I don't want to spend too much time specifically on the Bills game. But something... So, Andy Reid on Monday. I imagine by now you've either seen or listened to hit the press conference, or you've just seen.
And I am pissed at what he had to say.
No, so here I want to start with this as a means of trying to like do some question and answer.
Okay.
So when Andy was asked whether he had considered making a quarterback change, he said, "No, that's not where I'm at right now. There are a couple other things that I've got to take care of." And so I wanted to, and some of this may be fun and jokes, but some of it may be like I'm genuinely trying to get, you know, inside Andy Reid's head. Andy, what more do you need to see, or what things do you have to take care of before you are willing to put Pat on the field? And so we talked a little bit about the DeMarcus Robinson thing, and I don't think that there is someone that you can put on the field in that position instead of him. You may see on Sunday against the Jets, DeMarcus Robinson be the quote-unquote third receiver, and Albert Wilson plays the majority of the snaps or something. Potentially. But the only other thing that we've seen them do... Right now, they released Ross Travis, and they promoted, is it Orson Charles?
Yes.
Is that the guy's name?
Orson Welles.
He got promoted from the practice squad. This is a guy that's played 20-some-odd games in the NFL, mostly, I think, for Cincinnati.
Oh, really?
But he was... So he played at Georgia, and I remember people thinking, like, this guy has elite athletic talent and just hasn't been able to put it together at all.
I faintly remember him playing in the preseason.
So, I mean, I don't...
Those are my thoughts on Orson
Charles. What I can tell you right now is that I think every guy not named Travis Kelce is pretty worthless, despite the fact that, you know, you finally saw like a 30-some-odd yard play from Demetrius on Sunday. I just, if it's not Travis Kelce...
Every tight end.
Yeah, every tight end on this roster, they're just bad.
Yes. But, I mean, we should be celebrating Ross Travis's release. That was a good day. That was a good hour.
Well, I'm just looking at it and saying, okay, so...
So things that he's changed.
Andy says there are a couple things I've got to take care of before I'm willing to consider a quarterback.
He took out Witzman and put in Fulton. That was another change.
Right. And so the other potential move, and it seems like a consensus at this point, and I don't know if it's just because the grass is always greener, but, like, everyone seems to say that Parker Anger is the best option at left guard and that he's certainly the best run blocker at left guard. And people are just like, why is he not playing? He's not on the injury report. He's active every week. Why is he not played yet? So, I don't know what the answer is there, but...
Yeah, we don't know anything, so...
I want to use this as a means to ask you, like, is Andy, whether it's tinkering with promoting a guy from the practice squad and releasing our third tight end...
I don't think that's what he's referencing.
Potentially playing the third different left guard this season, or
I think you're looking at being a personnel change, and that's not what he meant, I don't think.
And that's, I wanted to maybe debunk those things as a way to give you an opportunity to, I don't know, build on what you were talking about a couple weeks ago with Andy needs to spend the entire offseason making this offense for Pat Mahomes.
Yes.
Seemingly.
Yes. I think that was the plan. That was the master plan. We're going to ride Alex out, see, you know, try and get one more shot here. And then he's going to go, you know, hibernate and drop an offense for Pat Mahomes that plays with his strengths. Now, can he do it that quickly, midseason? I don't know. I don't know.
Well, so here's the
thing. That's my biggest question with starting Pat Mahomes is where is Andy Reid in designing an offense designed around Pat Mahomes? Because I think if you run this exact same offense, it's not going to be much better with Pat Mahomes.
Let me ask you this question. And I don't know if this is, I'm the only one that's thinking this or if others at home are thinking it too, but when you say design an offense around Pat Mahomes, what is he learning right now? What playbook is he in right now? And is Andy going to make him start completely over from scratch? Or is it it's just a simple matter of, as far as designing an offense for Pat Mahomes, is more about these are the plays that we're going to call, but they're all inside of Andy Reid's playbook already? Because doesn't it seem like a waste of time for Pat to be learning an offense and studying a playbook all season long, and then you get to an offseason and Andy completely redesigns it specifically for Pat and say, all right, we're going to start over now. Do you know what I mean?
I'd say he's not learning the specifics right now, or at least that's not like the focus. He's just learning like how to do it, how to call plays, how to be in a huddle, how to progress through the reads like Andy wants to. Mm-hmm. But it's not like he's like, study this play. Study this this running back swing pass right here and learn how to do that. But it is a good question.
I haven't looked at a playbook in so long that, like, I don't...
You don't play Madden?
No.
You ain't been Madden, bro?
Nuh-uh. I mean, so it's interesting, and maybe this is something that you and I can try to delve into, you know, even if it's just trying to find, like, a local high school coach or something. We obviously know that it's a smaller scale, but just trying to figure out, like, how does this work? Like... Is it just trying to get Mahomes to understand some concepts about this is the way that we do things, and then when it gets into, you know, you're the starter, then it's all about specifics and knowing where every guy is supposed to be on every play and all that?
Mm-hmm.
And you know that that's going to be a process no matter what. But I guess I don't think that... I know that it's the NFL, but I, for whatever reason, I just don't feel like it's that complicated. Like, I know that they went through sort of a quarterback battle, quote unquote, in Houston, but it was at halftime of game one when they were like, nope, Tom Savage is the starter. We're going to start this season with him. Halftime, it's so bad that he's like, you know what? We're going to put Deshaun out there. So, I mean, and Deshaun Watson and Tom Savage are two very different players. Now, Bill O'Brien is not Andy Reid. I get it. But I guess I just feel like I wonder genuinely if Andy Reid is just, he's so beholden to Alex. He just appreciates the guy so much. And he just doesn't, it's like he doesn't want to hurt his feelings or something. Because really, right now, to me, and maybe it's because he's his coach and like this is Andy's football team, and so of course he's going to have really high hopes. But like the only reason that you continue to play Alex Smith right now is that you believe that you have every opportunity to win a Super Bowl. With five games left, even sitting at 6-5, you are leading your division, and you think that you have the talent at every spot, and that your quarterback specifically, who for all intents and purposes you assume is not going to be here next year, at least we do on the outside looking in, yeah, like that's the only reason that you would keep him on the field, unless you think that Pat is like so far away from being ready that it would be like more of a detriment to him to put him in the game.
I would say Andy definitely looks at his own team differently than how we would. Because he has a chance to change things. Like, maybe it's not a belief in Alex Smith, but a belief in himself that he can get Alex out of this funk. But, I mean, if you're asking me to make arguments for why Alex should keep playing over Mahomes, I don't have many, other than he's better than what he's shown over the last few weeks. And, I mean, maybe part of it, maybe that 1-5 start and then winning 10 in a row is in Andy's mind. Like, we've been here before. Like, we've had the Alex Smith is the answer to every problem discussions before. Like, when we were 1-5 in 2015, that's what it was. I mean, we put all the blame on Alex Smith. And, you know, there's a reason we're doing this, because Alex has a very low ceiling, I guess I would still say, even despite the first five games.
His reputation is just not all that impressive.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're all excited to move on from him, and we're all debating this right now when 99% chance he has 5 to 7 more games left in his Chiefs career.
Yeah.
Like, we've made the decision to move on from Alex Smith. It's just a matter of when.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess Andy just looks at it, I would say he's still looking out for the 2017 season, when I don't think a lot of fans still are.
Yeah.
And he is saying that Alex gives them the best chance to win this week.
Okay. And I think that makes sense.
I guess so.
I mean, but that's, I think,
I almost talked myself into it.
No.
Not really.
But see, I think that where the problem lies with that, I look at it this way. It seemed to me like maybe the number one argument for Andy in continuing to start Alex, if you want to, you know, make it as reductionist as you just did and just say it's Alex is our best chance to win this game, and he's just going to take it one week at a time because that's the way that he's got to.
Yeah. And we have no idea how hard Andy's looking at this.
Right.
Maybe he's close to pulling the trigger. Maybe he's not. Maybe he is saying Alex is getting the rest of this season. Mahomes be damned.
I didn't have the opportunity to go and like try to cut pieces of his press conference, and it probably would have sounded really bad anyway on Amateur Hour here. But
the Chiefs did not deserve extra attention this week.
When
we will bare ass it.
When at the pretty much the end of the press conference, Tyshir went back and basically said, like, tell me unequivocally that Alex is your guy, and he said, Alex is my guy. And then Petro asked him to sort of clarify, and he talked for another couple minutes. And it was like, Andy sounded so tired, so frustrated, and he said something about, you know, he said, he goes on to say it's not just one guy, and I think that people are frustrated with that, but he's like, you know, the offensive line can do better, I can do better, you know, Alex can do better, we all know that, but he said something about calling plays, and Andy said, it's not working. And I was just like, oh, man. Like, just listen to this guy. And don't get me wrong, like, who is anybody to try to say, this is what Andy means, or this is what he's thinking, or whatever. We don't know anything. People say that Andy's one of those guys that gives you nothing in a press conference anyways.
As he should.
But it was...
I've never understood people looking into Andy Reid's press conferences, like, trying to find stuff out. It's like, he's giving you as little as possible, and he's going to put all the blame on himself, always. Well, every time.
So what we need to do, then...
And I think he's... Go ahead.
I think that we should try, at some point, we should just play a game and call it, like, National Treasure, and we have to go through and decode a whole press conference for Andy.
But I don't think there's anything there. Like, I don't think he's...
You never know. It could be the treasure map to the find of the century. I get to be Nicolas Cage, though.
Who else is in it? I've never seen it.
You haven't? Oh, man. I like National Treasure. I think it's fun. That's why I wanted to do it. Mm. I thought it'd be fun. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. I think I was just going to say, I mean, Andy's just as frustrated as we are.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of these plays that we're watching over and over on Twitter via graphic, informative...
I think it's interchange.
I mean, he's seeing it like, this should work. And when it's failing because, you know, receiver runs the wrong route. Or because Eric Fisher misses every block he attempted in the game. Or because Alex Smith misses the throw. Or because Kareem Hunt chooses the wrong hole to go through. Like, it's just one problem after another, and that's how he looks at it. Whereas we all look at it reductively and blame everything on Alex Smith because he's the easiest guy to blame, I guess. And because we got our savior waiting. And like, we're all excited to get to him.
I think that's the biggest thing, is that it appears that Alex is the biggest problem, and that you also have the most viable solution. Like, you think Kareem Hunt's playing poorly? Like, what are you going to play more Sharkhandrick West? Like, oh man, I'm fed up with Eric Fisher. Gonna start Cam Irving.
I am fed up with Eric Fisher.
You know what I mean, though? Like,
no, I know.
Like, that's I think where they're at, or at least, you know, where most fans are at, myself being one, of just like...
Are we kind of lacking depth? Is that a big hidden issue right now?
I think that there are a few positions where we are, but, I mean, who is...
like, our backup offensive line...
I don't think that the backup offensive line is, like, terrible, but, I mean... People have complained about how poor offensive lines are playing across the league. I feel like offensive line being bad is the new quarterback play being bad in the NFL.
Yeah.
Well,
offensive line play is way worse.
But that's... So, like... I mean, who's the third tackle? Who's the best third tackle in the NFL? Like, I couldn't name him for you.
It's not Cam Irving.
So it's not Cam Irving. It might have been Jaw.
The offensive line's a bad example, because I think... That's an example of the guys were paying, not getting it done.
Right.
But I guess the depth would be more like receivers, talking about DeMarcus Robinson being the only option. Mm-hmm. And then on defense, you look at, you know, kind of the struggles, whereas we still have Justin Houston and Marcus Peters both playing somewhat well, but like it's maybe the other guys that aren't stepping up around them. But
I want to talk about the defense, but not quite yet.
We got to talk about the offensive line, though. I mean, we're kind of hitting on it, but... We're paying three guys, and they're all playing right now, and we want to pay another that is playing right now, and they aren't good. Mm-hmm. How are we paying this many guys, and they aren't good? They aren't any good. I know you're looking for it.
Like, there's only one problem. You're not any good.
Like,
can you just imagine,
I think,
like Eric Fisher retorting to you and being like, oh yeah? Well... I've seen those podcasts you bring home, and they suck!
Nice. I mean, Fisher's not... He's actively bad, I think. I think that's shaping up to be John Dorsey's worst move. Not drafting him, but re-signing him. And he's making, you know, top 10 tackle money right now. And I don't think he's good. Or at least he's having a really bad year. And maybe we'll hear after this year, like, he had this injury and he's playing through it and blah, blah, blah. But we're paying Tardif. We're playing Schwartz. We want to pay Morse. And yet we can't run the ball. Buffalo gave up, it was like 650 rushing yards the last 3 weeks. Oh, and we got, and Kareem Hunt had 11 carries for 17 yards.
Dude, that was...
And you, I get it. You could be saying Alex Smith right now at home. There's other NFL teams with terrible quarterbacks that are still able to run the ball. And this is one thing that I'm mad at Andy Reid for, because I think he has a big hand in the offensive line. And maybe they paid Fisher against his wishes or something like that. Maybe they paid Tardif against his wishes.
Against Andy's wishes.
Against Andy's wishes. But we're not getting a return on investment in the offensive line. Like, when things go to shit, you kind of want to look at the players you're paying. And one of the players, or one of the groups we're paying right now, is the offensive line. And they are not good. We cannot run the ball. I don't think our pass protection is very good. Yeah, and that's it. I'm mad at the offensive line.
So, it's the Fisher thing is interesting. You mentioned where his contract was.
I remember doing it earlier this year.
So there's a couple things. There's a couple things that I find funny. First and foremost, the first headline that I see is Eric Fisher signs 6 year, $63 million deal. And I was like, oh, that sounds familiar. Eric Fisher and Matt Castle.
That's the contract he signed?
Well, ultimately it says Chiefs give Eric Fisher a $48 million extension, which I think makes his contract 6 years and 63.
Yeah, even with the CBA, I mean, the number one pick still gets paid pretty well. We've paid Eric Fisher a lot of money to not be good for a long time.
Well, I guess I just...
supposed to be, like, rapidly improving. Like, that's... That was supposed to be his thing. Like, he was supposed to be raw. We're supposed to give him years to improve. We're at his peak right now. This should be his prime. And he's been awful. Awful. I would say he's been worse than Alex Smith. He's not nearly as important as Alex Smith. So Alex is more glaring. And he's holding the offense back more than Eric Fisher. But at their jobs, I think Eric Fisher has been worse.
Well, I don't think that they're... I don't think they're paying him that much, like, for left tackle, but I don't know what other left tackles get paid. I just look at the number and I'm like, that seems about right, I guess. But, I mean, here's the silver lining, if you want.
Nope.
Weird thing? What's really weird to me? Eric Fisher's 26 years old. He's 26!
Saying what, he's young?
Yeah, I mean, like, don't get me wrong, he's played for 5 years already or 26
should be his prime.
Is it really?
Yeah.
For offensive linemen?
I guess, maybe.
I feel like maybe like 28 to like 31 is like really getting it and your body's fully developed.
Think it takes that long?
I don't know, man. I mean...
I guess I was just looking at NFL players as a whole and I would say like 26 to 29 is the prime years for an NFL player. Well, but obviously that skews younger for, you know, skill position players that need explosive athleticism, pass rushers and receivers and the like. Whereas maybe the offensive line are more craftsmen, so maybe that, you know, skews older. But still, he's 26.
If the team really feels like he's terrible,
there's nothing they can do right now.
Well, they've got an out after next season.
After next
season, like SpotTrac puts the thing in there, potential out.
Yeah.
What year? And it's after next season.
Wow, that shapes up well for 2019.
Oh, look at that. Hey. So that works out well.
I got one more big beef on the offense.
Okay.
And it's against my guy. This isn't easy for me. But Andy Reid refusing to go up-tempo while the offense just putters into abysmalness. Bleh. I don't know. Abysmalment. That's a problem board. His refusal to go...
Abysmalment.
His refusal to go up-tempo just astounds me. Like, we've kind of established Alex Smith is a rhythm quarterback. Correct?
At the beginning of the Bills game, I was like, okay, Alex is a rhythm quarterback. Andy, that means you need to come out, your first 15 or whatever, and like, dude, throw me some slants, get Alex going a little bit. I don't care if it's short passes, but just like let him see the ball go through the hoop, so to speak.
Yeah.
Like, just do a few things here, and then we can start hopefully running the ball in the second half and get some play action and stuff. Like,
and one way to do that is to go hurry up. Like, his college offense was extreme hurry up and short passes and go. He played under Urban Meyer. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, we never go to that. And I didn't check it this week because I didn't want to do any research on the team. But as of last week, we played at the slowest pace in the NFL. The slowest pace.
Is that a are they just judging that on the play clock?
Yeah, and it's... And
always
it's,
snapping it with 2 to 3 seconds left on the play clock.
Yeah, it's a DVOA stat, or just Football Outsiders.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, it's... I forgot the term they use. Fuck, I'm not looking it up. I ain't fact-checking this. But it's like neutral situations. I think that's it. So it's like when the score is within reason and doesn't exclude like the end of the second quarter or the end of the game.
Right.
Like typical plays, what pace do you play at? And yes, it's number of seconds per plays stat. So we are playing slower than anybody else in the NFL. And I kind of hit on this a few weeks ago that I wanted to see the Chiefs play faster.
Controlling the clock?
Yes. Which has worked a lot for the Chiefs. But I would say that benefits your defense. Whereas I think we need to be looking out for the benefit of the offense right now. Mm-hmm. And that would be more like, fuck the clock. Like, let's score points.
You know, that would benefit the defense too. Like, you know, playing with a lead, maybe.
Yeah.
Getting to...
A wise man once said that on 20 straight podcasts. If the Chiefs can play with a lead, and yet they haven't for many weeks now. So that really bothers me, is that the Chiefs just refuse, and I don't get why. Like, at least just try it. Like, we haven't even come out and attempted it these last 3 weeks during the struggles. Just try it. Just mix in a hurry-up drive in there. Get a big play and sprint to the line and run your next play. Get the defense off guard. We're just making it very easy for the defense to set up these complicated calls, which is confusing Alex Smith. And maybe if we're in a hurry up, they couldn't set up these plays. They'd have to stay in like a base defense. They wouldn't have time to confuse Alex before the snap. Mm-hmm. And we just refused to be the aggressor there. And that's, man, one of my biggest beefs last week. We were watching together. You saw me do it over and over. You might just thought I was spazzing out, waving my finger in a circle. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing it over and over. Go, 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 go. And they won't do it. They will not play fast.
Couple things.
Okay.
I think Andy's pretty deliberate. And don't get me wrong, like he's really smart. And he likes to try stuff here and there when he thinks it's viable. And
I think that's a very good way. I'm trying to think of how to put this because that's something I've lobbied for. It's a way to win a lot of games, but you're kind of winning with scheme and with outsmarting the opponent and playing small ball. Whereas I feel like the Chiefs now have all this talent, like these guys on offense that we want to get the ball to. Everybody wants to see more Kelce, more Tyreek, more Kareem, all of them. Mm-hmm. And we're playing this minimalistic style with low number of plays, so we're not able to spread the ball around. Like, use your talent. The more plays you play, the more likely it is the more talented team wins. Mm-hmm. Because there's less margin for error. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. Go ahead, sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I think it's just like, I'm not in any way saying that your point here isn't like well thought out football point.
Cool.
Right?
The end.
I guess if I'm trying to like play Andy Reid in this scenario,
yeah.
I think that fans for the most part are looking at it and we're just saying like, try anything other than what you're doing. I don't care what it is. Try something. Do something different. And the biggest thing that most people are saying is put a different quarterback out there. But it's like, if you're going to stick with Alex, like, Andy, you got to do something here, man. And I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's we're going to call 15 straight run plays. I don't care if it's I'm going to call 15 straight pass plays, and that it's always going to be like within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, but no screens, right? Or whatever. I don't like, but just trying something. And if you want the tempo to be the thing that they try, I don't know if Andy is going to look at it like that. I think Andy thinks that they can just play their way out of this, and maybe that he can like call the right plays to get their way out of this without having to, you know, change the tempo or do anything especially drastic. Like, I think that he's just trying to show faith in the guys that he has because he believes that they're good enough or whatever. And I agree. I can't disagree with that because I do think that the Chiefs have talent. You're lobbying for the fact that they have talent. You just want them to use it a little bit differently. And so the biggest thing is that, like, I completely agree with you. You're essentially making the same argument that I think we've probably had that conversation multiple times where it's that Chip Kelly theory of the more opportunities that you give me, the more points I'm going to score. And we are at a point now with this offense where I think that most people, and it's not just Chiefs fans, this is not like the red and yellow colored glasses. I think most people can look at it and say, Kareem Hunt, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, like, there aren't many teams that have that kind of, like, top-tier a skill talent.
Player trio like that?
And certainly, like, the diversified skill, too, because it's not just, like, having three wide receivers that are good.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to see them get as many opportunities as possible. And if the best way to do that is by, you know, making your team go faster, trying to create more opportunities, I mean, what the offense did the opposite of that on Sunday against the Bills.
Yeah.
I went through and read Seth's article. The Bills had 7 possessions in the first half.
Yeah.
Because the Chiefs kept going 3-and-out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, when you're playing against an offense that is struggling and you give them 7 opportunities in a single half of football, what do? They end up scoring some points.
Yeah, not very many.
Not very many, but I mean, but look at what Buffalo has.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, I'm with you, man. I want Andy to just do something different.
I think Andy looks at it like, I can out-scheme the defense. Yeah. And I think he can. But I think Alex is holding him back there. Like, he's putting too much faith in Alex. Like, he's trying to put the faith in himself, but it's Alex that is holding him back there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting too undone by too many small issues, like a missed block, or a play that's not run properly, or a missed read on a throw. We have enough talent that it should just be like, we should just have that and then keep rolling. Like, okay, we messed up a play, let's keep rolling.
Yeah.
But Mars is like, we messed up a play, we're done. Like, we're not going to overcome this 2nd and 14. It's not going to happen.
That's almost exactly what I was going to say. I mean, I think it's a really smart point that you're talking about, you know, wanting to speed the game up in order to not just try to get your offense in a rhythm, but not allow the defense as much time to set up and disguise what they're doing and whatever. Like, you're almost kind of playing into their hands a little bit by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we talked about with the defense early in the season was, what do you take away? And now that it's shifted and the defense is playing well and that the offense is playing so poorly, like, that's kind of the question that I'm starting to ask myself about the offense, is not like, what do you take away, but like, what do you dictate? What are you making the defense do? Are you challenging them in any way? Because it seems like the defense is willing to put 8 guys in the box, play press man on the outside, but also be in like a zone. And it's just like, what are we challenging? What about this team is threatening, despite just in all your, it's what, it's just the pictures of the guys when you start the game, when they're doing the lineup announcements, you're threatened by Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Kareem Hunt. But like,
Kelsey's the only one being properly utilized the last few weeks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Tyreek Hill had, I think, 7 catches or something, and he only had like 40 yards. The fastest guy in the league. I mean, I am truly embarrassed that that's what it has come down to for Tyreek. I mean, that is kind of the perfect picture of not throwing the ball downfield, is that that's ultimately what his stats ended up being in a game like that.
7 for 41.
Yeah.
11 targets for 41 yards.
I mean,
ruining that pristine stat we all had on yards per target for Tyreek.
But see, I mean, that's the thing, is that you're talking about a guy that he's fastest player in the league. He's shown an ability to actually play the ball really well, too, when you throw downfield for him. And it's just like,
I think they're just
saying, he should get 41 yards on one catch 10 out of 16 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, if not 16 out of 16, I know that like that's maybe exaggerated a little bit. You know, guys are going to have bad games, but like 7 catches and he got 41 yards out of it?
Yeah, I mean, it was just Screen City on him.
I think I saw that Alex didn't throw a single pass beyond 20 yards.
No, he didn't. And he threw like 3 or 4 against the Giants in the win.
And he had 36 attempts on Sunday. Not a single one went beyond 20 yards. Yep. That's unbelievable, man.
Especially with some of the pictures you see of Bills crowd the line.
Yeah.
I don't really understand. Like, defenses, one thing they're saying is like they're playing, like safeties are kind of playing deeper. So they're taking away the deep shots and they're taking away the run. I don't really understand how both of those are happening, but I feel like they're like daring Alex to beat you with intermediate throws and by moving to a second read. And it's pretty much like they just found his weaknesses and he's been, you know, gotten the better of. Mm-hmm. Now, how that hasn't happened the last 4.5 years, I have no idea. And maybe it has been, and the defensive special teams have just covered it up, so we've, you know, overlooked it. Or it hasn't been as glaring a problem as it has this year. At least for some. I know some of you are speaking right now, like, no, I've been blaming Alex for years.
Yeah. At one point, within the last few weeks, Therese said that starting Mahomes would be a really bad signal for veteran players. That it would maybe disappoint guys.
I think there's arguments to both sides there.
So here's the thing, like, what does that mean exactly? And who are we talking about?
The example he likes to use is like, go up to Justin Houston and tell him that you're putting in the rookie. So I think,
but that to me, I think, is such a poor example, because not only is Justin like good soldier, but the way that the offense has been playing the last few weeks, don't you think people would be excited about a change? Or do they love and admire and trust Alex Smith so much that there's no way the kid could do any better than what you're seeing?
Well, you see a lot of fans saying, this season is over, so we might as well go to Mahomes. So I think that's the attitude you're kind of trying to avoid with your players. But other people believe you want to put Mahomes in to spark the offense and try and save this season.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like which way you're looking at it. But I mean, I also look at Travis Kelce throwing his arms up after 5 plays where he's wide open, and he's right, because he's the best player on the offense still. Even with Tyreek and Kareem out there, Travis Kelce is the best tight end in the league. He's the only one that's the best. Mm-hmm. And he's open on these plays, and he should be getting it. And the offense is struggling, and he's looking at it like, I'm open, and I'm not getting the ball, and it's Alex's fault. And in the moment, he can't hide his frustration. So I don't think you're going to tell Travis Kelce that you're putting in Mahomes and have him be mad about it. I can't imagine that. And maybe it's a young versus old players thing.
Maybe we're underestimating. Talking about like veterans specifically, but for me, I guess the way that I was looking at it, and maybe it's a little bit easier because I'm not putting my body on the line for the final 5 games of the season, but I'm looking at it thinking, you have the potential of sparking the offense now, but even if you don't, you're getting a head start on next year. And like, of the veteran players that we're talking about, who's not going to be here next year? I mean, generally speaking, we think Derek Johnson and Tomba, but like, do you think that either one of them is going to be so angry that you pulled Alex? Like,
see, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if
maybe Tomba, but like, I don't see that from DJ.
It's pretty impossible to take the pulse of the Chiefs locker room. Maybe some media members that are in the locker room would have a better idea.
And maybe that'd be a great question to ask him. But I would kind of look at it like, Kelsey's on Mahomes' side. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah.
Based on what we see out of him. And it wouldn't shock me if other young players are on the side of Mahomes. Like, they see the future, and they might be ready for it right now. So Peters and Tyreek and those types of guys.
All the good players, you mean?
But...
All the ones that really matter.
Yeah, well, for the future, yeah. But if you sit down Derek Johnson, if you sit down Justin Houston, if you sit down Tom Bahaly and ask them what they thought, I don't know what they'd say.
I guess that's true.
And that would be the argument for Alex Smith. Like, these guys want to write it. They believe in Alex Smith, and they want to write it out with him.
Okay.
And, I don't know.
Well, I want to use that as a transition so that we can talk about the defense a little bit before we go. And I want to talk specifically about Derek Johnson's diminished role on the defense. Something that I think none of us really thought Bob Sutton had the stones to do. And maybe that's not the right way of saying it. Maybe it's like... his heart was with Derek Johnson, like so many different Chiefs fans, that it's like, it's a really hard decision to make.
Fuck, we had the conversation, like, what do you do, bench him?
Right.
And the answer seemed to be, put him in a rotation.
Well, did you read the story from Matt Derrick at Chiefs Digest?
I did.
All right, so for those of you that don't know, just a quick little backstory. Suddenly you see Matt Derrick all over the place, you see his reporting, and a lot of people don't know who this guy is or how he, I don't know, became a popular writer. For now, he is essentially Herbie Tiope. Tiope took the job in New Orleans, and he was the lead writer for Chiefs Digest, and Matt Derrick has taken over that position. So he gets access, I believe he has a press pass, he's there every week. And Matt's been doing some really great work. And this article, I found it really interesting that it was him that got it, I guess. I mean, it's almost an exclusive. I don't know if other people were... talking to DJ, because I didn't hear these quotes in any of the other times that DJ has been talking to the media.
Yeah.
But he talked to him about this transition of, you know, listen, you're only playing like half the snaps the last few weeks, and how does that feel, and what does this mean? And it's not just the ultimate, it's a team game, and whatever's best for the team, and blah, blah, blah. One of the things I found most interesting was he said... that in talking with the coaches, because of his age and because of some of the limitations that as he's still trying to get completely healthy from the Achilles injury, he said it's so much better for his body. He's like, when I'm going out and I'm having to play 60, 70, 80 snaps in a game.
You're talking about Derek Johnson saying
this. Derek Johnson saying this about himself. He's like, I feel so much fresher going into the week of practice. I feel so much more... fresh on the field, and frankly, I feel like I can give it more in the 30 plays that I'm getting than I have to spread out what I've got left in my tank playing 60-something.
Yep.
And talking about, you know, how much Reggie Ragland is coming to him to try to learn and how impressed he's been with the way that KPL has played. And it was just like, seeing it was like, this is... the Derek Johnson that I know and love.
Yeah, that was kind of my main takeaway. Like God bless Derek Johnson, because he's just, you know, the ultimate team guy. He can see the bright spot in getting benched, essentially.
Yeah.
And it's not full-time benching. He's still getting out there. But I think we were all wondering what the solution was for the middle linebackers. Like, we asked a lot of questions one week when it was glaring that Derek Johnson was part of the problem. And we didn't have a lot of answers. And I think they came to the right answer. With this rotation of Ragland and Pierre-Louis and Derek Johnson all pretty much playing the same number of snaps.
And all of them look better than they did when they were, you know, playing previously. Yes. How it was being mixed up and trying to just throw Ragland out there or just throw KPL out there. This mix has made all three guys better.
Yep. Yeah, it's been very successful. Reggie Ragland had a great game on Sunday. And I saw him doing things, I don't know if it's a scheme change or what, but I saw him shooting gaps where I don't feel like our middle linebackers are doing that before. And maybe that's because the Bills are so run heavy or what. But and it led to a few wrong guesses. He would shoot the wrong gap a few times, but he had three tackles for loss. And there's a few plays where he just, you know, wrecked the play in the backfield, like, whoa, where has that been all year? And I feel like we've seen a lot of middle linebackers taking on blocks and not being able to shed them. And, you know, it's just an easy 3 or 4 yards. Whereas we were finally aggressive on defense, which is something I've been calling for, and it worked. I mean, we held LeSean McCoy, one of the best running backs in the NFL, 22 carries for 49 yards. 2.2 yards per carry. I mean, that's a damn good job.
It's a little bit better than 11 for 19 or whatever it was. Yards per carry, a little bit better.
17.
But I mean, you know.
Not a lot of running between these two.
Not great.
10 tackles for loss for the Chiefs on Sunday.
Yeah.
10. 3 for Raglan. Zombo had 2.5. Houston had 2. Sorensen 1, which I think was a sack. Chris Jones had 1. Lots of tackles for loss. The defense was, by all intents and purposes, great on Sunday. I mean, the only thing they're not doing right now is taking the ball away like they used to, I guess.
One thing that I thought when seeing Ragland and, like, some of those tackles for loss and some of the hits that he made, he's obviously a different style player from Derek Johnson. And one thing that I like a little bit is that, like, when DJ made big hits, for the most part, when DJ made big hits, aside from, like, the destruction of Jalen Richard,
yeah.
but a lot of times, like, the DJ special is like, getting somebody, like, right in the thigh pad and taking them down.
Don't forget when he laid out Jamal Charles on the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Those are his two biggest hits. But yeah, no, you're right. He chops the legs.
Yeah, right? He cuts a guy down, and it's a smart way of tackling.
And a lot of it is, like,
less wear on his body, I guess.
Well, and a lot of it's one motion where he'll dive underneath the block while tackling the carrier. Now, I mean, we haven't seen that much this year because he's breaking down. But that used to be the DJ special, was diving underneath the block and taking out the running back in the same motion.
And getting to see Raglan, like, hit Raglan's guys just in the chest.
Missile.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
Rocket.
I absolutely love it.
There was one even not in the backfield, like one 8 yards downfield, and he just plowed LeSean.
One thing that I'm really impressed with, I guess, I just don't think it can be understated that while they were trying a number of different things and specifically at linebacker trying to figure out, like, what's the best way to utilize the guys that we've got, they stuck with Ragland when we were like, this guy hasn't made a play in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
They kept putting him out there. And you knew that sooner or later, whether it was needing to get healthy or just needing time on the field, like, you had to hope, like, that this guy was going to be the starter at some point just because of how highly touted he was coming out of Alabama. And I mean, the Chiefs didn't give up a whole lot for him.
Were we trading him?
I think we gave up our fourth.
Yeah. Okay.
But, I mean, that's a fourth-round pick for a guy that was taken in the top 40 picks the year before and got hurt.
He looks great. And I almost wonder if we kind of tailored our scheme around him a little bit. Like, hey, don't sit back and try and read this. Just attack.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think he does. He looks really good. It has been interesting, and I don't know if this is the case. Because we saw it a few times where, like, he and DJ were kind of flipping a little bit. It seems like, over the last 2 weeks, that Raglan has been playing what DJ normally plays. And not that DJ is then becoming, like, the thumper, but it seems like it's intended for Raglan to be the one that runs and makes the play instead of just, like, trying to occupy a blocker or whatever. That's what it looks like to me, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure.
We need Caleb.
You were talking about them playing specific sides on Sunday, and I just see him switch, so I would think it's like a strong side, weak side kind of rotation.
Okay.
Like, put Raglan on the strong side so he's taking more blocks, I would think would be the idea, but maybe... I have no idea. I'm just guessing here.
I don't either.
One question I have, if they're all three rotating, who has the radio on their helmet?
I don't know how that works. But I'm wondering if you can just put it in multiple helmets, but it's only activated, but I don't know how the NFL works with those rules.
If you put
the green dot on the helmet and that guy gets hurt, like, you have to have another person. Or you can't just be screwed and be like, well, you picked the wrong guy. He got hurt today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
I don't know how that works. That is one of those tricky things that has never made sense. I have two other questions. Do you have anything else that you want to go through?
Well, we put in Terrence Mitchell, and I thought he did. I don't think he allowed a catch.
He did not.
I think was the stat.
Yeah.
So we should cut Revis.
Terrence Mitchell finally played...
I think that's the worst, like, personnel decision the Chiefs have made all year was trying out Acker and even Gaines last week against the Giants when Terrence Mitchell was just clearly the better player. And I don't understand.
I mean, Therese has said it quietly but often enough
that he didn't run the assignment or whatever.
He said that he freelanced too much and he didn't basically, yeah, play inside of the defensive scheme. And so it's like, okay, well, yes. I mean, if they're going to bench somebody for doing that, then let's assume DeMarcus Robinson isn't freelancing as much as we thought.
Well, and Peters gets all his interceptions by freelancing off his guy.
Well, but maybe that's the point, is that the way the defense was set up was that they allowed Eric Berry to do it, or they allowed Marcus Peters to do it.
And Mitchell wanted to be one of the cool guys.
Yeah, but that means that
I'm going to do it too, guys! Like, Terrence. I just think Terrence Mitchell's a good player.
I do too. And
I don't really know the rotation now.
Do you really want to watch Darrell Revis?
Yeah.
Like, this is, we're doing like the anti Mahomes here, and it's like, yeah, you know, people want to see the young guy at quarterback, but they want to see the old guy at corner that we just signed. Like, it doesn't matter if Revis isn't good, but I don't know. It's definitely a, we still think we can win the Super Bowl. Like, that's what that signing says to me. Not, we're trying to change things and we think that this is going to, whatever. But, like, it was, I think it was 100%. We still think we're competing for a Super Bowl. So,
yeah, definitely.
We'll put Revis on this roster.
And I also like putting an alpha dog out there because I think they're lacking in that. Some veteran leadership. Because DJ has never been a local guy. And it's basically Justin Houston and was Eric Berry. But Berry's not out there.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty much just Justin Houston that's holding players accountable. Whereas you need another guy to do that.
Yeah, and I think that, like, Eric Berry was always the person that, like, if he talks, everyone listens.
Yep.
And you could say that Justin Houston is that. I just don't think that he's especially verbal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like maybe he was taking over some of, like, the huddle stuff at the beginning of the game. But, like, I don't know if Revis is a big rah-rah guy. I have no idea. But I can tell you this much. He's the only guy on the team with a Super Bowl. He's the only guy on the team that is, like, consensus Hall of Famer guaranteed. And I just feel like when Revis talks, everyone's going to show
up. Well, yeah, all the defensive backs on the team grew up, I mean, they were in high school and college watching Darrell Revis shut down Randy Moss. So they're going to idolize him.
Yeah,
they're going to listen to what he says.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I still like the move. I don't know what the rotation will be. I thought Nelson's kind of struggled the last few weeks. What are they going to do? I mean, obviously, is Peters and Nelson going to start and then Revis be the third corner this week?
I think that's probably what will happen this week. It depends on, like, how ready he is. I mean, Revis got
a Revis-Mitchell rotation.
Really excited to go line up out there in New York. I just imagine that, like, if it works out the way that they want, it's going to be Peters and Revis and, like, a true nickel in Nelson. Nelson will come onto the field when they go to nickel, but they're going to just start Peters and Revis. That's okay. What they want. But, I mean, how often are we really playing base defense anymore?
I wonder if you see, like, a Mitchell Revis rotation just to see.
Good.
Mix him in and also, you know, see if he's still in the game.
Yeah. Okay, well, so the last thing that I wanted to ask about the defense before we get out of here. We feel like the last couple of weeks the defense has been playing pretty well. They look better. People are really upset at the offense because the Giants scored 12, the Bills scored 16, and you still don't end up winning.
And I thought the defense was a lot better against the Bills than the Giants.
Yeah.
I'll say that. Because the Bills have more talent on offense. Tyrod and LeSean McCoy, I mean, if nothing else, is a very formidable running game.
Oh, and they gave the offense so many opportunities to do something, and they were just so full.
The Giants have zero talent on offense, so it was like, yeah.
Well, I warned everyone that we would see an improvement by the defense statistically, that things would even out simply by sheer talent that the opponents have. You're going to be playing worse teams, and they're just not going to be as good. They're not going to be as difficult to defend. So the Chiefs might be sitting at 28th in the league defensively when we get into this backstretch, and they're going to end up at 16th or something because the last 7 weeks, all these teams suck.
Yep.
Do you think that that's what we've seen the last couple weeks? I mean,
how
much is it that we're playing the Giants and the Bills? Because it seems like they've made some of these moves, and the moves have worked, but, you know, we're not playing against that difficult competition.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's a little bit of it. I think it's both.
A little both.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't. I mean, who's going to test us? I guess the Raiders will test us again. The Chargers.
Do you think we're going to see Pat Mahomes before the season is over?
I will say no.
Maybe the better way to ask this question. Maybe the best way.
Well said, Steely Dan.
Kansas.
Damn.
Every song that you like, it's got to be Steely Dan, right?
I just want to rub it in your face that you like Steely Dan. Somebody chimed in like way after the fact, calling you out about that. Like this season at some point.
I'm sure.
Good for them.
You don't think we're gonna see him at all?
I would say the offense doesn't play that bad again, so it becomes less of the conversation.
If they play really bad in New York again, and you assume that San Diego beats the Browns, and we're at the very least tied with San Diego for the division lead, and we've got to play Oakland, San Diego, Miami, and Denver left on the schedule. I mean, I don't know at that point, man. If you have another terrible game and you play really poorly and lose at the Jets and the offense is bad again, like it's time.
This might be the week. But I don't think they'll play as bad. But I haven't thought they'd play as bad like each of the last 5 weeks. So
right.
I'm gonna continue to be puzzled every Sunday watching this team. But I mean, the key games are the Raiders and Chargers. If you win both of those games, it's virtually almost impossible to lose the division, I would think.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends.
I mean, you either have the 2-0 advantage over the Chargers.
But I mean, they could win those games and lose the others and be 8-8. Like
they'd have to win it at 8-8. We'd have to lose multiple other games. But
yeah,
those are the two big games left. Whether you still care about this season or not,
I don't.
So, would you put in Mahomes this week?
I think I would, personally. But for me, I'm in that middle ground of I think that it is both good for this season and certainly good for next season by putting him in now. That's kind of where I'm at. Because I don't, even if Alex plays a little bit better, I don't think we're going to get Alex from the first 5 weeks. And I think that there's way more potential that Mahomes could come in and completely light it up and play like that, play like Deshaun Watson did, than that you're going to get that from Alex. Like, we have a better chance to win the Super Bowl, I think, with Mahomes on the field than with Alex. But I also think that even if that doesn't happen, it's better for next year to give him some things that you can actually be like, you played in these games, and this is what we did good, and this is what we did bad, and we can spend an offseason reviewing tangible stuff instead of just projecting what it's going to look like when he's on the field.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really important to try to get him ready. When I look at, to me, the team is not winning the Super Bowl either way, probably. But I think Mahomes gives you the better shot. So I just want to get him on the field. I want to get started.
I think I would.
I'm a little antsy though.
I would, well, as you should be, as as most fans I think could relate. I think I would start Mahomes this week and give him a trial run. Because I think the argument that if you bench a starter, you can't go back to him is nonsense.
Right.
Like, Tyrod Taylor just did it.
Sure.
Like, he's still going to be looking. He's still playing for a contract next year. I mean, Alex Smith is a grown man. I don't think that will shatter his confidence. I mean, something's shattered his confidence, but I don't think that'll make it any worse. I don't think he can be less confident right now than he already is. And if anything, it'd fire him up.
I think it's
but
personally better to do it in the middle of a game instead of we're just going to start Pat this week and then next week go back to Alex or whatever. Because at least with that, it's like, Alex, you need to sit down. You need to sit down. It's that bad. Sit down and think about it. We're going to put Pat out there and let him finish it.
And see next if Pat can do it.
It's when we're going to reset. Because then you get to look at both of those things, but you're still sort of just like, take a breather for two quarters and we'll see what happens next week.
I would rather start him. personally.
It doesn't matter to me.
I would get the game plan going. I think this is the week to do it, unfortunately, because, like I said, the two big games are the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So give Mahomes the trial run. If he succeeds, then roll with him into those big games. And if he doesn't, you go back to Alex Smith and try and savor something out of the season.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
I like that. All right, folks, this has been Amateur Hour. Ryan Scott, all he's is darkness, and this is Kansas.
Again.
Yeah. Point of no return.
I
feel like that's kind of where we're at.
Oh, real quick, did you see the Sean McVay story at all? Sean McVay is doing something really cool where they're all getting up to the line as fast as they can, pretty much, the Rams offense. And, like, lining up with 22 to 25 seconds left on the play clock. And the radio doesn't go out until 15 seconds. So they're lining up, and then he's radioing in the audible to make. So Goff isn't actually doing it. He's just listening and then relaying it. But you have to line up as early as 22 seconds left on the play clock for him to look and then make the adjustment.
That's really hands-on. I mean, that's...
But look at the success!
Right.
Jared Goff had the biggest one-season turnaround I may have ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, and you would think that Andy could do that with Mahomes, too. Like, listen, kid, I'm gonna keep the training wheels on as much as possible.
Yeah. So that's... I thought that was really interesting, and I don't know if teams will start copying it yet, but I think that will be huge next year. I think that will be something a lot of teams implement this offseason.
I read something that the guy that is the quarterback's coach, or I think he's McVay's offensive coordinator, but has been a quarterback's coach. They were talking about, like, maybe he's the guy that is actually making them good. Rams OC. Matt LaFleur. So...
Matt LaFleur. Sounds familiar.
It's like... Let's see.
I'm thinking of a former Cowboys tight end.
Here. Quarterbacks coach at Notre Dame in 2014 gave... What's-his-face? The really great season.
Kaiser?
Not Kaiser. Who was the guy before him? A quarterback that's not great had a great season at Notre Dame in 2014. And then 2015 and 2016, quarterback coach for Matt Ryan... in Atlanta, underneath Kyle Shanahan, and now he's with McVay. People were pointing out, like, look at these things, like, look at, maybe he's the key.
So it's not David LaFleur, former Cowboys tight end.
No, Matt LaFleur.
LaFleur.
LaFleur. LaFleur. No.
Hey, I really enjoyed that.
Congratulations, honey, you were great.